भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विभिषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ पूर्णमरः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ असतो मा सत्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मामृतंगमय ॐ शान्तिः 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 तत्सवितुर्वरं रूपं ज्योतिः पारस्य धीमहि यन्नः सत्येन दीपये
Good evening. We begin the 14th chapter of the Life Divine this evening, the Supermind as Creator. Came into print originally on the 15th of September 1915. Probably was written in the month of August, possibly around his birthday, a month in advance, so that it could get out on time in September. He opens with the translation of a Sanskrit sentence taken from the Vishnu Purana. This is the only reference taken from the Vishnu Purana as a motto. Anywhere else in the Life Divine, there are only references to well-known Vedic texts and no pulling from the Vishnu Purana, which was his favorite of all the Puranas. And there's a reason this one appears, we'll see. He translates, "All things are self-deployings of the divine knowledge." In the original translation, in the Arya, it's a little different. It says, "All things are self-expandings of the idea." The Sanskrit is Janohi Vijnana Vijrimbitani. Vijnana, the idea of this great knowledge, this great power of knowledge, could be translated like this also. All things born come through the expansion of knowledge, as if they're being breathed out of the mouth. A great mythic image of how the universe comes into being from the great person. And remember our context that Satchit Ananda was originally a concept from theistic Vedanta, the idea of a great personal being who gives utterance that creates the universe as he enters into it. So while we're looking at citations, let's back up to the chapter of the Divine Maya from last time and look at that footnote in which he is translating a term from Sanskrit, ancient Sanskrit, which he renders as truth consciousness. And he says, I take the phrase from the Rig Veda, Ritta Chit, which means the consciousness of essential truth of being, Satyam, of ordered truth of active being, Rittam, and the vast self-awareness, Brahat, in which alone this consciousness is possible. Truth conscious, and it is a faculty of awareness which takes the essence of being and orders it into a harmonious manifestation. Satyam, Ritam, Brahat, the ancient Vedic formula. The truth, the well-ordered right of things, and that which is vast as a setting in which it all occurs. And all these things are descriptive of this great consciousness, which he will call, in English, supermind. So, let us begin. A principle of active will and knowledge, superior to mind, and creatrix of the worlds, is then the intermediary power and state of being between that self-possession of the one and this flux of the many. So you can imagine, there's a oneness above, and then there's this diamond consciousness, which is both will and knowledge, which translates that oneness into multiplicity. The one becomes the many through this agency, full of knowledge, capable of accomplishing, and direct in its will. This principle is not entirely alien to us, he writes. It does not belong solely and incommunicably to a being who is entirely other than ourselves, or to a state of existence from which we are mysteriously projected into birth, but also rejected and unable to return. If it seems to us to be seated on heights far above us, yet are they the heights of our own being and accessible to our tread. We can not only infer and glimpse that truth, but we are capable of realizing it. We may, by a progressive expanding or a sudden luminous self-transcendence, mount up to these summits in unforgettable moments, or dwell on them during hours or days of greatest superhuman experience. When we descend again, there are doors of communication which we can keep always open, or reopen, even though they should constantly shut. But to dwell there permanently on this last and highest summit of the created and creative being is in the end the supreme ideal for our evolving human consciousness, when it seeks not self-annulment, but self-perfection. For as we have seen, this is the original idea and the final harmony and truth to which our gradual self-expression in the world returns and which it is meant to achieve. So he is again writing from his own experience when he says we can glimpse this truth and we can realize it. He knows himself in his own progressing sadhana that he is climbing higher and higher in his ascent, based upon already firm realizations, up this mountain of being towards that supramental height. He is moving there. And yet, even though you get these flushes of illumination, sometimes one falls back into the gravid state that pre-existed, but you can reopen the adventure. You can again climb back. And each climb makes you stronger. And each exposure to that truth lengthens out. And so one becomes finally capable of the conquest and the living in it constantly. But that is the supreme end. And an achievement which we must continue to strive for, as it has not been done finally yet. So he is writing about a bridging truth that is inherent in our being, that we can awaken permanently. And this is the answer of our spirit to the quest of existence in this universe, that we prefer fulfillment over annulment. The goal of the individual in the world is to regain this originating poise of consciousness that gave birth to the world, because thus we redeem it. And he continues with the next paragraph. Still, we may doubt whether it is possible now or at all to give any account of this state to the human intellect, or to utilize in any communicable and organizable way its divine workings for the elevation of our human knowledge and action. The doubt does not arise solely from the rarity or dubiety of any known phenomena that would betray a human working of this divine faculty, or from the remoteness which separates this action from the experience and verifiable knowledge of ordinary humanity. It is strongly suggested also by the apparent contradiction in both essence and operation between human mentality and the divine supermind. Let's back up. Word dubiety is not often heard in American English, and we'll simply translate it as doubt. So that there are rare examples of someone attaining to the supermind, that it is doubtful whether anybody can climb there simply because they have a mental aspiration to do it, is not the only problem, because we have an apparent contradiction between the essence and the operation of the human mentality and the divine supermind that we have to account for. There is this divide between these agencies of awareness that we have to account for. So rare experiences and the distance between a perfect supermind and the inconclusive mind has to be approached, analyzed, discussed. So, the next paragraph. And certainly, if this consciousness had no relation at all to mind, nor anywhere any identity with the mental being, it would be quite impossible to give any account of it to our human notions. Or if it were in its nature only vision in knowledge, and not at all dynamic power of knowledge, we could hope to attain by its contact a beatific state of mental illumination, but not a greater light and power for the works of the world. But since this consciousness is creatrix of the world, it must be not only state of knowledge, but power of knowledge, and not only a will to light and vision, but a will to power and works. So, they cannot be mutually exclusive, mind and supermind. There must be some inherent connection if all comes from Satchitananda and is an inexpressible oneness which is a whole. However the manifestation occurs, they must somehow be connected. Not simply connected, but one a part of the other, expressive of the other. But this light that he writes about achieves what it conceives. If this is the supermind that we understand, it will not simply be an inner illumination that results from attaining it, but it counts towards the change of the dynamics of the world, because it is a creative consciousness, because it is the creatrix itself. It would have, should we evolve this power, the capacity to transform the nature in which it sits. it would change fundamentally the matrix that would become its form. Its nama and rupa would undergo a shift in valuation from one of obscurity to one of revealed light. To continue, and since mind too is created out of it, mind must be a development by limitation out of this primal faculty and this mediatory act of the Supreme Consciousness, and must therefore be capable of resolving itself back into it through a reverse development by expansion. So, mind then is a restriction of supermind. Huh. And so, the supramental poise is what he's writing about here when he says primal faculty and mediatory act of the Supreme Consciousness. Remember, that Supreme Consciousness is Chit, Chit Shakti above, in the triplicity, the triune reality of Satchit Ananda. The mediating power, the faculty of supermind, stands between and renders that Satchit Ananda, that oneness, into multiplicity. Supermind, in a sense, restricts itself into mental operation. And because mind is a restriction of supermind, it contains the supramental power and light inherently inside itself, so it can turn around and resolve itself through a reverse development by expanding back into supermind. It can release itself. Consciousness, seemingly conflicted and diminished in mind, can become illimitable, vast, and fully illuminated as it returns to its origin in supermind. And that, of course, is yoga, the supramental yoga of Sri Aurobindo. For always, he writes, mind must be identical with supermind in essence, and conceal in itself the potentiality of supermind, however different or even contrary it may have become in its actual forms and settled modes of operation. So mind has its grooves of operation. It has its settled habits. It has its known orbits, and yet can be changed. It may not then be an irrational or unprofitable attempt to strive by the method of comparison and contrast towards some idea of the supermind from the standpoint and in the terms of our intellectual knowledge. Because of that essential identity, we can frame an idea of what the supermind might be. Yes, the mind cannot see it in its fullness, cannot imagine it, it isn't wide enough. But since one is cognate with the other, we can, using terms that are familiar and apprehendable to us, construct an image, which we know not to be the thing itself, but we can discuss it and say what it is like. We can use metaphor. We can use analogy. We can use the logic of the infinite, if you will, and strive to attain an exposure to that light and come close, close as we can. And so Sri Aurobindo will continue to write philosophy. The idea, the terms, may well be inadequate, he says, and yet still serve as a finger of light pointing us onward on a way which, to some distance at least, we may tread. The idea indicates a route. Moreover, it is possible for mind to rise beyond itself into certain heights or planes of consciousness which receive into themselves some modified light or power of the supramental consciousness, and know that by an illumination, intuition, or a direct contact or experience, although to live in it and see and act from it is a victory that has not yet been made humanly possible. Of course, this is a sadhana that he's actively working on as he writes this in 1915, rereads it, let's say 1939-40, and still has the humility to say, we have not been able to achieve this bridge to the supramental consciousness entirely. But we can stand in its radiance and see from the tops of our experience that illumination, that intuition, that direct contact or experience. Illumination and intuition will become important as he later develops his philosophy and describes a range of overhead planes of consciousness between mind at its peak, the rational mind, the philosophic mind, and the supermind. So there are farther steps that we can take in ascent as we ride towards that absolute oneness and towards that unitive creative consciousness. And we become illumined, we become intuitive, and we begin to live in the identity of that. And so rays of that great light play in our awareness. And with those rays come necessarily greater powers, because all awareness has power, but the greater the awareness, the greater the power, the more transformative its impact. So, living in the supermind in the future, but living in those greater realms above mind, absolutely attainable, absolutely possible now. And the supramental draws nearer and nearer. It waits for our growth, doesn't it? To continue. And first we may pause a moment and ask ourselves whether no light can be found from the past which will guide us towards these ill-explored domains. We need a name, and we need a starting point, for we have called this state of consciousness the supermind. But the word is ambiguous, since it may be taken in the sense of mind itself, supereminent, and lifted above ordinary mentality, but not radically changed, or on the contrary, it may bear the sense of all that is beyond mind, and therefore assume a too extensive comprehensiveness, which would bring in even the ineffable itself. A subsidiary description is required, which will more accurately limit its significance. Well, look how the word is constructed. Super mind could mean just a bigger mind. More capacious, but not gifted with the creative power of what he has called the truth-conscious supramental. Or, if we call supermind all that is above mind, and then that would include the reality of Satchit Ananda also, and that's not what is meant. This is the mediating consciousness, bridging the upper triple world, Satchit Ananda, and this lower triple world, matter, life, and mind. So he's looking for a precedent, looking for some precursor, some ancient sage or group of sages that had similar experience to try to find a language that would be useful to us in describing philosophically what is this supreme creative consciousness. And he continues, it is the cryptic verses of the Veda that help us here, for they contain, though concealed, the gospel of the divine and immortal supermind, and through the veil some illumining flashes come to us. We can see through these utterances the conception of this supermind as a vastness beyond the ordinary firmaments of our consciousness, in which truth of being is luminously one with all that expresses it, and assures inevitably truth of vision, formulation, arrangement, word, act, and movement, and therefore truth also of result of movement, result of action and expression, infallible ordinance or law. So the Vedic rishis offer us this body of expressive power. The Vedic formula that we've encountered, satyam ritam brahat, the true, the right, the vast. This description taken from Vedic language, vast all-comprehensiveness, luminous truth and harmony of being in that vastness, and not a vague chaos or self-lost obscurity. Truth of law and act and knowledge, expressive of that harmonious truth of being. These seem to be the essential terms of the Vedic description. The gods, who in their highest secret entity are powers of this supermind, born of it, seated in it as in their proper home, are in their knowledge truth conscious, and in their action possessed of the seer will. Their conscious force, turned towards works and creation, is possessed and guided by a perfect and direct knowledge of the thing to be done and its essence and its law, a knowledge which determines a wholly effective willpower that does not deviate or falter in its process or in its result, but expresses and fulfills spontaneously and inevitably in the act that which has been seen in the vision. This is Ritta Chit. The truth conscious is a translation of Ritta Chit. We know the term Chit as being consciousness. Ritta is that ordering of the essential truth of being, and in the ordering retains fully its consciousness. Now, the idea of the seer will, that is Kavi Kratu in Sanskrit, Vedic Sanskrit. Kavi is the seer, and Kratu is the exercising of the will. We see it often applied to Agni, the devata of the psychic plane. For those of you who have read and studied this, you'll remember that idea. So there is an expressive power in Vedic myth, in its language, and he is going to pull those images, those expressions, into his interpretative language to capture the fusion of this gnosis with omnipotence. Gnosis, the greater than mental knowledge from the Greek, and omnipotence, that which is universally powerful. So, back to the end of the paragraph. Light is here, one with force, the vibrations of knowledge with the rhythm of the will, and both are one, perfectly and without seeking, groping, or effort, with the assured result. So what it sees, it affects. The light attains its goal. The divine nature has a double power, a spontaneous self-formulation and self-arrangement which wells naturally out of the essence of the thing manifested and expresses its original truth, and a self-force of light inherent in the thing itself and the source of its spontaneous and inevitable self-arrangement. Now, this is interesting. First, the spontaneous truth of its being, which in uttering accomplishes. This is the second time he's used the term inevitable. The first time was inevitably, a couple of paragraphs back. But because what it sees it does, its conceptive power is inevitable. And we see here and in his great epic poem, Savitri, the idea of the inevitable word, truly inspired speech, is self-fulfilling because it is self-aware. The idea of vaksiddhi in the Tantra, that there is a fulfillment in the power of speech, goes back to this idea. Remember, the breathing out that the divine being does in the expansion of that knowledge brings all of this into formation. These ideas that he's articulating here, he wrote about in the series called Secret of the Veda back in February 1915, 100 years ago, plus a week, 15th February 1915. So these terms are growing in significance. Let's move along. More awaits us. There are subordinate but important details. The Vedic seers seem to speak of two primary faculties of the truth-conscious soul. They are sight and hearing, by which is intended direct operations of an inherent knowledge describable as truth vision and truth audition, and reflected from far off in our human mentality by the faculties of revelation and inspiration. So again, truth conscious is ritta chit. Sight is drishti, and associated with the idea of truth vision. In terms of the Vedic goddesses, she would be Ila. And then the idea of hearing, that's Shruti, and associated with the goddess of inspiration, Saraswati. To continue with his sentence next, besides, a distinction seems to be made in the operations of the supermind between knowledge by a comprehending and pervading consciousness, which is very near to subjective knowledge by identity, and knowledge by a projecting, confronting, apprehending consciousness, which is the beginning of objective cognition. These are the Vedic clues. And we may accept from this ancient experience the subsidiary term truth consciousness to delimit the connotation of the more elastic phrase supermind. So these shades of differentiation are very meaningful to us. The comprehending and pervading faculty of the supramental is akin to knowledge by identity. That is what reaches out and englobes, which embraces. The apprehending aspect of the supramental is that which reaches out to touch, moves out, apprehends, confronts, and that leaves or draws into formation the objective form, the objective cognition, because it is from the objective cognition that the objective form arrives at being. The inner truth forming an outward habitation for itself from the inside out. So, on to the next paragraph. We see at once that such a consciousness described by such characteristics must be an intermediate formulation which refers back to a term above it and forward to another below it. We see at the same time that it is evidently the link and means by which the inferior develops out of the superior, and should equally be the link and means by which it may develop back again towards its source. So this knowledge power links the upper and the lower worlds, Satchit Ananda, so to say, with the manifest universe that we know and move in. Satchit Ananda above transports itself through this diamond consciousness of the supramental into this world. But in building the world, has the reversible power to draw it back to itself, or for that child consciousness to rise back to its parent consciousness, for the multiplicity to regain the unity of Satchit Ananda. The term above is the unitarian or indivisible consciousness of pure Satchit Ananda, in which there are no separating distinctions. The term below is the analytic or dividing consciousness of mind, which can only know by separation and distinction, and has at the most a vague and secondary apprehension of unity and infinity. For, though it can synthetize its divisions, it cannot arrive at a true totality. The mind tries, in its own field of vision, to reconstruct unity, to regain it and recover it, but it cannot so long as it remains isolated in its smallness. Inevitably, for mind to reach unitive knowledge, it has to outgrow itself, step beyond its own reaches. So the supermind mediates. He continues, between them is this comprehensive and creative consciousness. By its power of pervading and intimately comprehending knowledge, the child of that self-awareness by identity, which is the poise of the Brahman, and by its power of projecting, confronting, apprehending knowledge, parent of that awareness by distinction, which is the process of the mind. This says very much about the formation of the universe, because that comprehensive aspect of this supramental creative consciousness establishes through its pervasive power the impersonality of Brahman that will support all existences, the ground of being, the Sat that we know as Brahman. That is an aspect put forward from Satchit Ananda by the supramental consciousness, and is the great storehouse, you might say, from which all is drawn into direct manifestation, itself impartite, itself unmanifest. It is a great ocean of being. And then, through the power of projecting and confronting, this apprehending aspect allows the diversity and the constriction of consciousness to occur, by which forms become stable and mind assumes its role, which is to distinguish, but not ultimately to unite. So it is a functional consciousness, which the mind is, not connotative, not Gnostic. So, above, the formula of the One, eternally stable and immutable. Below, the formula of the many, which, eternally mutable, seeks but hardly finds in the flux of things a firm and immutable standing point. Between the seat of all trinities, of all that is Byun, of all that becomes many in one and yet remains one in many because it was originally one, that is always potentially many. This intermediary term is therefore the beginning and end of all creation and arrangement, the Alpha and the Omega, the starting point of all differentiation, the instrument of all unification, originative, executive, and consummative of all realized or realizable harmonies. It has the knowledge of the One, but is able to draw out of the One its hidden multitudes. It manifests the many, but does not lose itself in their differentiations. And shall we not say that its very existence points back to something beyond our supreme perception of the ineffable unity, something ineffable and mentally inconceivable, not because of its unity and indivisibility, but because of its freedom from even these formulations of our mind, something beyond both unity and multiplicity. That would be the utter absolute and real, which yet justifies to us both our knowledge of God and our knowledge of the world. So the supermind points beyond Satchit Ananda and the One to an inexpressible reality. And here we should confer with the Taittiriya Upanishad in its description of the non-being before being. Remember, Sri Aurobindo said the Upanishad does not mean that there is no existence, but that it is a non-existence because it is free from even the positive formulation of being, of sat. Free even from that, it is absolutely indefinable. Satchit Ananda is something apprehendable to our awareness. But what that is, it is beyond Satchit Ananda, which is the ground of being, conscious exploration of itself for its own delight, which is all this cosmos. So we have a resounding return to the beginning of his philosophy with this recurring question: is there being or is there non-being? Well, the non-being is beyond being, but is not absence of being. It is freedom of being, freedom from itself, freedom even from its own expressive power, even from its own unitive experience, even from its creative capacity. What that is, the mind can never know. But the supermind, in a sense, points to that. And so we're not going to be able to finish the entire chapter tonight, and this is probably the most comfortable place to pause in the going forward of it. So I suggest that we put our bookmarks here for this evening. And since we're just on the other side of the mother's birthday, I wish you all a bonne fête again. We're still in the radiance of her glow. And if you have any questions, you can send them to me by email, or you can ask them now if you have one. Else we'll...
How would you characterize the difference between the original Arya and what's finally published as the Lifetime?
To this point, Sri Aurobindo has made rare alterations, usually an inclusion of a phrase, to suggest that there is the consideration of the overmind, There is a reappraisal of how he has translated some of the Sanskrit. He has included some terms that will later have great meaning in the second half of The Life Divine. There isn't much that he's done in terms of alteration or editing or rewriting to this point, but we're drawing near the first book, and then on the other side of that will be a new territory where Sri Aurobindo has written much in addition. He always felt that if he'd had time, he would have rewritten the first part of the book. He said he felt that it needed it. So he, while these paragraphs and pages seem wonderfully expositive to us, to him they seem thin, that he could have said more, and he felt that he should have said more. But it's always a question of time. Now, what you might like to do is go back to your table of contents at some point and look and see what he's done, because you're beginning to climb up and down the great ladder of being. What is being? Is it or is it not? And then it is, so it is Sat, the pure existent. And then it is Chit, the conscious force. And then we have to deal with delight, the nature of the world, our experience in the world. And then how does that Sat-Chit Ananda transpose itself into this universe? And we have looked at the divine Maya. And the divine Maya is, of course, this truth consciousness which is able to take the oneness of the Supreme and translate it into the many. And now we're moving into the nature of the supermind itself. And when we've looked at supermind, we'll look at mind, and then at life, and then at matter, as that great creative movement condenses as it descends into the basis of the cosmos. So he's showing us the great chain of being, taking us through descriptive mythic language brought into philosophic parlance in a grand formulation which is beautiful to the ear. And I think, if you'll permit me again, I'd like to read one closing section. That's the wrong way to put it. I'd like to close with a section from Savitri. Alien now seemed that dim, far universe. Self and eternity alone were true. Then memory climbed to him from the striving plains, bringing a cry from once loved, cherished things. And to the cry, as to its own lost call, a ray replied from the occult supreme. For even there the boundless oneness dwells. To its own sight unrecognizable, it lived still sunk in its own tenebrous seas, upholding the world's inconscient unity, hidden in matter's insentient multitude. This seed self, sown in the indeterminate, forfeits its glory of divinity, concealing the omnipotence of its force, concealing the omniscience of its soul. An agent of its own transcendent will, it merges knowledge in the inconscient deep, accepting error, sorrow, death, and pain. It pays the ransom of the ignorant night, redeeming by its substance nature's fall. Himself he knew, and why his soul had gone into earth's passionate obscurity to share the labor of an errant power, which by division hopes to find the one. So, thank you. Namaste. Jai Ma.